January 12, 2006, episode number 10, interview with Luann Patterson, a.k.a. Mama Lou.
This is a Slaga podcast.
They can try to ignore me once, but if they ignore me twice, I think I get the hint.
No, I wasn't ignoring you.
Not a problem.
Especially after all the tension that was going on the list. And then got on yesterday.
Well, it's back again.
I thought, I think I need to go and just put myself on
vacation. Vacation mode.
Or somewhere I go and I go look at it if I want to instead of get up and I've got 75 emails because everybody's like sending little messages, like messaging through the board.
I don't have the same experience that everybody else does because they get in their inbox and they reply to somebody in an email like they would in an email. I go to the, basically they call it the archives.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to end up doing.
And, you know, I log in to my computer and I get on the internet and I click on this link and I go down to the bottom and anything that's still in bold blue I haven't read yet. I just click on the first one and say, take next, until I'm through. And then I've caught up. So
that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I think some people reply based on them thinking it's just to a couple people in the group.
Yeah.
I just don't realize what they do. So I turn off a little bit of, this is everything I know about you. Guess what? I got your blog.
Oh no!
Because it's linked on your
I know.
So
yeah.
So it's public information. But
yeah. That's funny. I kind of forgot it was there for a while, and I went back and was reading it. And I'm like, I really didn't say anything in there.
Your last post was September 16th.
That no one's ever.
Yeah, it's not like
I hear nothing with me is off limits because I'm pretty much a big man.
Oh great! That makes for a perfect podcast. It's gonna be a really dry introduction, basically, you know, here I am, and here's Luann, and it tells about your past, and whatever, and then basically we get into geocaching, so how much, I mean, we can jump back and forth as well, too, so if we don't cover enough of Josh, we can always go back to it.
Well, when this gets linked, or gets up, or whatever, then I'm going to put it out on the fan club for my friends to link to.
Okay, well, let's just get started and go with whatever happens.
You will, like, edit and stuff.
Oh, there's lots of editing.
Okay.
So don't worry. If there's something you say and you say, edit that out, it will be edited.
Oh,
no need to worry. And all my ums and my ahs and sometimes pauses, that will be, for the sake of brevity, those will all be taken out.
Okay.
So I can't change what you say.
No.
And if you want to re-say it, just say, oh, let me repeat that in a different way. Okay, here we go. This is Paul Konopacki, and we are recording podcast number 10. I'm in my dining room with Luann Patterson, also known as Mama Lou. She is going to tell us about herself, her past, her hobbies, one of which is geocaching, another which we will find out about real soon. So thanks for being here, Luann.
I'm 47. I live down in Park Hills in St. Francis County. By profession, I'm a registered nurse for 23 years.
So that's been your career choice since early age?
No, actually, it was sort of, I ended up with a child and had to support him, and a two-year college program seemed pretty doable, and get out and make a living. So that's what I ended up doing. It's not what I dreamed of as a kid. In fact, I don't know what I really want to do when I grow up.
Specifically, what do you do? I work at the hospital with patients?
I work on what is known as a telemetry floor, which means that I take care of patients that have a heart monitor. I've worked probably the most of my career as a critical care nurse, but that gets so old after a while, and I did some travel nursing and went to California, which was a lot of fun, but that was sort of a transitional period. And right now I just really take care of the general Just general sick people.
What's the name of the hospital?
Parkland Health Center in Farmington.
You've recently changed your job schedule. Is that so that you can do things during a different schedule than normal people do?
Yes, that was a very sudden decision. I was working day shift, predominantly during the week, and a position came open called weekend option where you work every weekend for a year. And I didn't want to work weekends for a whole year until I realized that with my daughter being with her dad every weekend, because he lives out of town, and to get her to school adequately, she goes to him every weekend. I thought, you know, if I work every weekend when she's gone, then I can be at home with her during the week and not have to leave her at home alone like I was. Unfortunately, that also wreaks havoc with geocaching, because all the events seem to be on the weekend.
And lunches are far away from where you
lunches
live as well.
Lunches are far away, and it's hard to go get a cache for me now because they're all out of town. And to get to, you know, I get her off to school and trying to head up to the city and do a few caches and get back in time to get her from school is challenging. And it's really put a dent in my geocaching. But
you're limited to what you can get within a certain hour range before you have to get back to the other part of your life. How did you get started with geocaching? Do you remember your first geocache?
Yes,
that you found?
I do. I got started really... I was out of town at a family reunion, and someone mentioned this hobby to me, and it sounded very fascinating. And as soon as I got home, I had to try it. So, well, I didn't have a GPS, and I got to looking, and I picked a cache that I thought, just by the description, I should be able to find that. And that particular cache was Missouri High Point at Tom Sock, and it was described as underneath a tree in a pile of rocks. Well, I can find that. Except I got up there and realized that there's piles of rocks under every tree. And I was bold, and I found it, and later found out that the place is riddled with snakes, and I was lucky I didn't disturb one, though I didn't see any. But once I found that first cache, I was hooked, had to go find more. I did two more without GPSs, and those were Elephant Rocks. And the memorable thing about one of those was, surprisingly, I found it without a GPS, and I'm really not sure how, but I did. And the logbook was full, and somewhere in reading, I thought that if the book was full, you were to take it and replace it. So I put a nice, fresh one in there and made off the logbook, and I got back home. I got to read it, and I was like, oh, I did a bad thing. I wasn't supposed to take the book. So we went back, and I replaced it, feeling very embarrassed, but that's how I got started. That's been 2.5 years ago.
What are the favorite type of caches that you like to go? And if you want to say, which are the ones you don't like the most?
I like micros. I like the...
So you're the one who likes micros.
I like her. I know. I hate to say it. I like them all, but I tend to like the micros because it usually doesn't involve... I like everything, but...
Well, that's okay.
I really like it all.
I
do like... like micros, I don't know.
Is that because a lot of them are in suburban settings where they're easy to get to?
I think the ease of getting to them probably has something to do with that. Plus, I think they can be more sneaky. And you can hide something.
They have to be.
Just by nature that you can hide them in more places than you can an ammo can. For me, it's a personal satisfaction of just finding something that people were walking by and not knowing it's there. I know it's there and you don't. Or finding something that people have been having a hard time finding. Like there was a cache in Indianapolis, the Shelter 2 cache, that I know a lot of people were watching that. And it just drove me mad. I wanted to go so badly, and I was trying to get some people around here to go because I want to go find this hard cache, and I wanted to, you know, someone from Salaga got it. But I do it for a lot of reasons. But really, personal satisfaction, like doing the Daryl one. But I was determined I was going to find that, and when I found it, I like doing group hunts too, but I really like hoofing it on my own, probably the most.
That's first to find anything that interests you. Some people it does.
It, It's fun. It's not a, I'm not a strider. But, you know, hey, if I lived up here, you know, maybe that'd be different. If I was close to them, I, you know, whenever No Future puts out a cache, I'm usually the first to find on it because it's in my area.
Well, who else puts caches down that way? I mean, Harry Hillbilly did for a while. He was maybe a little bit further south, but he's archiving all of his. There's No Future.
Keith, yeah.
You put out a few.
I had my own two that I put out. I adopted two. And I actually have now, and then, but I archived those, and I have another, just one out. Down there, it was a policeman, I believe, Pope. Pope, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know any of the people other than No Future that have put caches out down there.
Right. In fact, No Future is on the list of one of the people putting out the most. I think he's got like 22, 23, 24 caches that are still active. Mm-hmm. As of today, his are themed to be geological.
Madman.
But I think he also put them. A lot of them have a lot of waypoints.
Yeah, his geology ones are good. I learned things, and I know Keith's wife. She works at the hospital as well, so I have a little insight to him through her.
Do you get a chance to travel much?
I came back from Springfield, where my real purpose was just to go find an urban area with a lot of caches that I could hit, because I was limited on time. And, well, I did use it as a little bit of a getaway with my daughter, Caroline, and got her actually to finally pick a name for geocaching. But with my other hobby, my other passion, I try to do a cache in every town that I am in with that. Back in August, I had the opportunity to go see this person, and I opted to drive and cache the whole way, which was 1,300 miles one way. So I geocached all the way there and back. So I try to work caching into wherever I go, whether it's just to cache with that sole purpose or just as a second thing.
You said you need to get home tonight because your daughter's going to put out her first cache?
My daughter has again gotten excited about geocaching, picked her a name. She's gotten on her own, came up with a little, not a Tupperware, one of those little cheap plastic containers, and she has an idea of where she wants to put it, and we've got to go find the right spot.
Oh, that's good.
So it's not going to be anything really hard, but she's excited.
The other thing that you say you're interested in, maybe you could tell us a little bit about that. Where would you go and travel so far just to see one person?
Let's see. I drove to Massachusetts 2 weeks after I had major surgery to see this person. I drove to Sioux City, Iowa to see this person. I've flown to California, to Vegas, to North Carolina, to Virginia.
And once you've seen this person, you keep on wanting to see this person again and again in different places?
No. You're going to have to edit this out, but everybody says, you know, if you've seen him once, why would you want to see him again? I'm saying, it's the same thing. I don't know what else to say. Yes, he's a different.
Okay, so this is a groupie thing.
Yeah, I'm a groupie.
Okay, and tell us a little bit more specifically. Who is this person that you are following around?
Well, this
stalking.
His name is Josh Groban.
Josh Groban. Never heard of him.
I hear that a lot. Josh is a young man who's the same age as my son, I know. He sings the song that most people have heard is called You Raise Me Up. He sang the national anthem this year at the opening game of the World Series.
Wow.
He also, he sang in Chicago, and I guess Chicago won, didn't they?
The White Sox?
Yeah.
Yeah.
2 years ago, he sang the opening game of the World Series, and that team won.
Boston Red Sox?
I don't know. Yeah. But now they're kind of wondering, I think, if, you know, maybe this is a good luck thing.
Okay.
He also sang at the Super Bowl 2 years ago, when they honored the Space Shuttle Challenger. the astronauts that died over the crash in Texas. And he's saying, "You raised me up there." Everybody says, "Well, what's he saying? Is he religious?" No. Is he country? No. Called classical crossover. Because okay. He sings some Italian songs, and he sings in Spanish, and there's a French song, and he sings in English, but he's not really opera, so he was calling him Opera Boy, but he doesn't really sing opera, just...
Tours quite often, and his show, is it mainly him as the front singer?
He has completed a tour of like 150 cities. He is currently working on a new album. He is the main. Of course, he has an opening act. He's had a variety. This last go-around, Chris Botti, who's pretty well-known, was the opening act. And actually, Chris Bodie's going to be in town this weekend.
So we know where you're going to be?
No.
No,
it's the weekend. Got to work.
Oh, well. There's always sick day.
Yeah. But Josh is not going to be around till the fall, probably. And then I'll be busy.
Has he been through St. Louis?
He was. He was in St. Louis July 18, 2004, which was the first time I saw him. He was at the Savas Center.
Awesome.
Yeah. Seventh row. And I thought, when he came out on stage, Caroline kept looking at me. Finally, she goes, "Mom, are you okay?" I couldn't breathe. I was just...
So you had your daughter with you?
Mm-hmm. She's gone with me to 4 shows.
Hmm. Your goal is still to get a picture?
I have met him. I have hugged him. I've met his parents. I've met his brother. Mm-hmm. One secret that most of the fan people don't know, and you probably have to edit this out.
Do you want me to?
Yeah, you will probably. If I link to this on the fan club, then
okay.
I've got a picture.
And you've gone through his garbage?
No.
Okay, well.
No. But he did leave a bottle of water, a drink called vitamin water that he drinks on the stage after rehearsal, and one of my friends and I confiscated it.
Oh, and it's now in your shrine.
No, it's actually in her shrine, because she's the one that had the nerve to reach up and get it.
Seemed like a very interesting ceremony. That
you
Now, what is a flapper?
Oh, now in these concerts, they have fans. Literally, fans blowing on the stage, I guess, for the comfort of the artist. Well, Josh tends to wear button-down shirts that he doesn't completely button, and when that fan hits him just right, the corner of the shirt will blow up, and you get a little glimpse of his belly. And one of the girls took a picture, and it was really we all know in Romania what the famous flat picture was. But anyway, a group of us, one of the girls, her name's Patty, started a thread on the message board about the flying flap. And really, I jumped on the bandwagon, and now it's all about the flap. We call ourselves the Flappers, and actually Josh knows about us. In Vegas, I went to see him in Vegas, and we had the Flappers breakfast, and we raised like $1,700 that morning for his charity. And later that evening at the fan club get-together, his parents came, and Patty, who's the one that headed it up, presented it to his mother, and she was really embarrassed. She said, "It's really embarrassing to have to say this in front of his mother, that this is from the Flappers." But they know, and he knows, and he loves them.
I'm sure he's glad to have rabid fans.
Yeah. He said at one of his shows, "You're scaring me." And I like it. Probably that my computer consumes me more than anything, which is where you can pretty much find me. When people tell me they can't reach me by phone, I said, "Message me."
You were involved with MOGA 2005, and it looks like you have
MITC. Yeah,
I
was on staff for both of those events.
What can you tell me about that, and are you going to be part of 2006?
Well, as 2006, I was hoping to participate, so with my new Times work schedule, I'm not going to know for sure until probably the last minute if I'm even going to get to go. I participated. The first one was held at Hahn State Park, which was very close to my house, and I thought it was kind of silly not to be on staff and be able to help since it was so close. And that was a lot of fun. I really hadn't been in Hahn State Park maybe once or twice my whole life. And that took me into the park. It was great. It was beautiful. Just had a lot of fun. I really hadn't intended on being on staff on MOGA, except when they sent out all the plans for it, they just like naturally included everybody that had been on staff before, and oh well, why not? Though I didn't get to help as much as I would like because of work conflicts, and it was further away from home. I had another blast doing that. But really, I'm hoping this year to participate.
To actually compete.
To compete, yeah. The MOGA for me is, if I get to participate as a competitor, it's going to be to find them in the fastest time, you know, like everyone else. I'm really not going to be focused on, if I get to go finding caches per se to log, you know, like that. It's just like the diehards. I mean, like that one girl that came from New Jersey, man, she was tough. That was a MIGC. I want to go out and prove to myself that I can do this, because it seemed like it ought to be really relatively easy when we were setting it up, and it turned out to be a lot harder. So I'd like to see how I do.
You're at about 600-some finds?
620-something right now. Sometimes it's the numbers, sometimes it's not. Certainly I want to have a huge cash find, but I'm not trying to beat out any particular person. It's really, I'm in competition with my own self. With work and so on, it's just prohibited me from doing that. That's why when I do go out, I try to like get a whole bunch in, so I can get my numbers up there.
Catch up with the rest of them.
Well, yeah, like today I had about 12 on my list, and I always overplan. And it just never, hardly ever do I get all the ones that I had planned, because I plan too many for the amount of time. I think I've gotten maybe 4.
You may be just as frustrated if you didn't plan enough and you got them all and said, well, I got time, I could have had some more.
That's happened because I don't have a laptop, and I don't really, haven't gotten into the paperless caching. I tried and it didn't really stick. And people are out there with their laptops and sitting in the car, and then I don't have that. And so it did come up one time where I was someplace and I didn't have any more caches and I had time, and I was like, I know they're here. When I was out on the road with Josh, I was in Sioux City, and I was in such a hurry. It was all planned at the last minute, and I had about 3 or 4 caches planned to do in that area, and I had done them, and I still had plenty of time, so I went to the public library. And, internet access. So I was able to kind of get around it that way. And, talking about my caching with Josh, I have tried to do caches in every town that I've seen him in. And most of the time, those really end up being virtuals, which, I'd like to find a real physical cache, but a lot of times for the sake of, especially when it was like you go in to see a show and you just have time, just maybe a couple hours, a virtual can be pretty cool.
Go downtown to the statue.
Yeah, like...
Get the numbers.
Yeah, one was at Raleigh, was right there by the RBC Center, and it was called Wolfpack. And it was just on the grounds of the RBC Center, and turned out it was didn't realize it was quite so close, but it was right there. I was like, yeah.
It looks like you do a lot of travel bug trading, too.
I have done a lot of travel bugs, but I have never put one out. Though... I've got the travel bug at home, the tag, and what's really kept me from doing it is I can't decide what I want the goal to be. But now I do. I have an idea, and it's just getting it ready. And I remember my first travel bug. They seemed very elusive, and I was like, oh, I've got to find a travel bug, and we found one. I was like, yes! And then over a couple of years, it's gotten like, oh man, I found, here's a bug. Oh, what am I going to do with it? Gee whiz. And, there's not a lot of caching going on in my area, so what I end up doing is I get them home, and then I'm like, it's going to sit here if I leave it. So then I got to go take it someplace else.
Right. becomes more of a burden than
it had. It sometimes does, more often than not.
This should never be controversy with travel blocks. Those are cute little things that just go along their merry way and move them to their goal, and that'd be it. I had one travel bug. Its goal was find a place in Microsoft because he wanted to work. He wanted to be a programmer for Bill Gates. But in Montana, somehow he got his way back to the Midwest. So I got him to some place nearby, Bellevue, Washington. Geocaching group there, that I sent them an email saying, hey, it's here. Can you get somebody to get it onto the campus of Microsoft? And the guy says, well, I work there. I'll just, you know, put it there. So I said, once it gets to its goal, just put it in your cubicle and just let it sit there. And if it reaches its goal, it's yours. But I have one travel bug. It's made its goal. I'm done. I'm happy.
And mine actually is going to have to do with Josh, and it's going to want to go to all the venues he's been in.
So you have a list of cities to go to.
So, yeah, I'm not sure if I want to say, you know, now you've got to look them up. So, you know, makes them find out more about him, or if I'll put it on the thing. I haven't decided, but this is really done. Maybe you won't even mention this, hopefully not. But one thing I get asked, everybody knowing I'm single, is, are you meeting any guys doing this? Well, yeah, I've met a lot of guys doing this, except they're all married guys.
Or old and retired.
Or old and retired. And yes, there are single men out there, and no, it's not a dating tool. So
don't get into geocaching.
Find it would
your
be great.
Mate.
It would be like really awesome to meet somebody that loves geocaching as much as I do and would tolerate Josh.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That last part's going to be a tough one.
That would be a toughie, but, you know, I think if I could, you know, cash anytime you want, we'd probably be fine.
Or they may have another hobby themselves, since, you're doing Josh, they can do something else, and we'll talk about it.
Of course, you can have the newest and greatest GPS device, sure.
Well, at least you would share a healthy hobby.
You know, it's the most fun a human should be allowed to have. Something Rush always says, Rush Limbaugh says about his show, that more fun than a human should be allowed to have, and that's my thing about geocaching.
Well, good. Well, that's a good philosophy. I guess we'll end on that. We'll be sure to remember you every time we see Josh in concert.
Thank you, Paul.
Doesn't it have to get old after a while?
Yes and no.
I mean, it's that identification of they know something about you. And it's nice to know that they are interested in that
party. Yeah. I listened to a podcast because Josh did one. I know, shocker. We get quarterly newsletters, and in one of the newsletters there was a hidden link, and you find it and click on it, and it took you to this podcast, which was really kind of fun. We all wanted to be Carrie, the lady that interviewed him. Can I be your assistant? At the Cuba, at that park that used to be the horse track or racetrack, and I was going in, and I'm going around because it says one way, you know, and I felt pretty sure it was that little train caboose or whatever. Oh. But I don't know, I'm going to drive all the way around. As I'm on the way, it says one way. There's a sign facing me on this side, and it says do not enter. And then right across them, it's another sign. When I turn back around, look, it said, do not enter. I went, do I stop?
Mm-hmm.
Someone must have gotten turned around, because then right past that was a sign that pointed, I'm going in the right direction.
Oh.
So did you find the one up there on that cemetery?
There
on 44, the gate to heaven.
It looked like a little private cemetery. On the South Outer Road. Is that the one?
Yes, I could not. I swear it said I just... Oh,
it even said it was like near the gate, or you don't have to go inside.
Well, I stood there, and I'm, it's got to be right here. Cause number one, this thing is saying I'm just right on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it said it was like 5 inches by 2 by 1/2 inch. I didn't have that right with me. I may have been looking for something too big, but I was really paranoid because there was like people kind of going in that business over there.
Across the street,
I'm like, I'm just standing outside this cemetery looking at it.
Mm-hmm. You want to know where it was?
Yeah. But I almost went back, but I was like pressed for time, and I thought, it's got to be a minute. When I looked at my paper in the car, I was like...
Remember the last time I ever did a virtual? I just don't get it.
Well, it,
even the location.
It depends. For me, the verses depend on what it is. Especially with Josh.
You have five locationless.
Those were actually fun when there was a moon tree, and you had to find the tree, and it was in DeSoto, and I just kept meaning to go up there and look through that park and find that tree.
Oh. River King, you all still doing?
We're done.
She doesn't know that I'm still recording now, so.
I think you recorded his entire life.
Yeah, I kind of watched. I used.
Well, I actually like it, then I started up again, so actually I'll turn it off right now.
There was that one on that caboose there at that Hood Park, or whatever that city park there in Cuba was. I could not find. Made me so mad. I hate not finding things that are easy. And that's probably one of the things I don't do is post do not find. I will go back and find
it. I usually do. Keep somebody else from going, and it makes the owner know, but maybe it ain't there. Because, you know, if I go there and then you go there and he goes there, and when none of us find it and nobody posts it.
In this part of the podcast, John, Luann, and I chit-chat about various geocaching topics. I also pop in the DVD video that I created for the Bruce S. 5000th cache find. And we talk a little bit about our own experiences on the Daryl and Daryl geocache.
This is the produced DVD video version.
Now, is this on the same thing that's on the website?
Pieces of it. The website's only about 4 minutes. This is like 15 minutes.
I recognize the park sign. Is that Bruce coming in?
Yeah, let me slow you down. Do whatever you need to do, and if I happen to be there, great.
Okay. I don't think anything slows him down.
That's his laptop on his back.
Well, he carries the laptop?
Yeah, well, for this one he did.
Well, he was telling me he's having PDA problems like I am.
It was raining the day I was doing it when I started out.
Both Ivan and Dave and I made the same mistake. We didn't make notice. We counted the keys, but we didn't write the numbers down on the keys. So we had to go back.
I knew that you had, if someone said, pay attention to everything. So I wrote down what was on the keys, about the keys.
Here you'll find directions to a three-digit number you will need later, okay?
Why did he need his laptop?
There are a couple things he wanted to do. He wanted to look at the topo map, see where they all were. Predict a waypoint was easier for him to get that way. And there was some type of deciphering you had to do that waypoint D. It was easy for him to just type this stuff in and then click a button and it would decipher it for him.
I hate to think that. I would never announce I was going to do something that hard and go out with 25 or 30 people waiting on me to finish, because I would fail. I wouldn't find half the waypoints.
So you didn't do any of those magic eye?
That's got nothing to do with my glasses, but,
okay, but
I did do it. I've done the one of RGS's. Took me three or four trips. I'd go in and find the first one, come out, and somebody would read it for me, and I'd go back to the second one.
I helped him put out that one.
I like that. It was hard for me to.
I couldn't read any of them, including the ones on the page.
The day I did this, I got back to the parking lot.
That also might be good if we would.
And it was either Daryl or the Roman. I think it was the Roman.
But there were so few.
I was so wiped out when I got back, and if I got to the parking lot, one of the park guys came up.
There was only two or three.
Yeah, because for the one, there's only enough for.
Looks like geocaching. I didn't have to say what I was doing. He said, looks like geocaching got the best of you today.
I know what I was going to tell you. I had a story I was going to tell you on the G-Podcast. I didn't tell you. Was about me finding the one in the middle of the Missouri River on that island out in the middle of the river. There's only been about five or six people found it.
Oh, Island Adventure?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I did that one. Yeah. Oh, that was very memorable for me.
Well, it was a non-event finding it in the bay, because I had been talking to it with a friend of mine who has a 65.
Oh, the boat. You took
he has
boat.
A 65-foot, big, huge cabin cruiser
twin diesel boat. Why don't we take the boat and do that one? You know, because you got to hike 10 miles to get to it if you walk. I said, John, you've never been up to Missouri. I said, you better not take that boat up to Missouri. Oh, you won't have any problem. So we go up there. We're 60 miles from where we put in when we get to the island. And we had to come all the way down the Mississippi, up the mouth of the Missouri, wind all the way through, and we get there. We got there about 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning. We anchor out in the midstream, take a skiff into the island, find the cache in no time, get on the skiff, and realize that how shallow everything was because we couldn't get the outboard on the skiff to start to let us out because the sand was so shallow, the water was so shallow. So we finally get back out to the big boat for another mile and went hard aground and couldn't get off. And $900 later, and two tow boats.
The big one.
No. Yes.
You actually went up toward like St. Charles here?
We were within sight of the bridge. We were inside of the Highway 70 bridge.
Richard Smile.
I'm sorry, the
370
yeah. bridge.
Wow.
And we ran aground right in the middle of the river about noon on Sunday, and they got us off about 8 o'clock on Sunday night. We sat there for like 8 hours before they finally got us off, building $900, which I paid for. And then we turned around and navigated the river at night on radar only, back down to the Mississippi, up the Mississippi through the locks. We had to go through the locks also. Didn't get home until 4 a.m.
That was quite a different adventure than mine.
Well, Paul, thanks for interviewing me. I'm glad I didn't overlook that email.
Well, I'm glad I got a podcast for both of you guys today.
Yeah,
I enjoyed the conversation with both of you today. I didn't talk about geocaching, but go geocaching.
This concludes the Slaga podcast. For more information about the Slaga group and geocaching in the St. Louis, Missouri area, go to www.geostl.com. Here's wishing you a strong signal and a trusty bearing.